Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is NASCAR driver Kyle Larson, celebrating trips to Victory Lane and the preparation that gets you there. For those who understand that each checkered flag is earned, one lap at a time. For those always ready to go the extra mile, even when the finish line feels a lifetime away. The experts at Advent Health support you for proving we all have the power to rise to any challenge. Advent Health, feel whole.
Right now, we are joining in the celebration of the 10th anniversary of the NASCAR Hall of Fame in Charlotte, North Carolina, and we say hello to NASCAR Hall of Famer Leonard Wood. Good afternoon, sir.
Hello. Glad to be here.
Thank you very much for joining us today. Probably, and you, I would imagine you get this a lot, you're kind of the inventor of the modern pit stop. You're the first guy to actually pull off a 25-second four-tire change.
Well, I mean, back in the day, 1960, we just started working at it, and, then you start working with what's slowing you down, and you just work on the weakest link, because if you don't have that fixed, you're not going to have a quick pit stop, but... You had to work on the fuel system and the jack and the tires, the power wrenches and all that. So it was a lot of do all that.
And you were there at the beginning. You were there when it was really grassroots sport. And today, here at the Daytona International Speedway, what's the biggest change you've seen?
Well, the biggest change, I guess, is how computerized everything has become, and just, I used to build sealant heads, design sealant head ports, and then make all kind of templates and gauges to make it, the next one the same way, and now they got a CNC machine to digitize it and make everyone just alike and just spit them out. So, yeah, it's this is our 70th year, and yes, we have certainly seen a lot going on, a lot changes, met a lot of people, and bottom line is I'm happy we're still here.
Ralph Johnson used to be Smokey Unick's right-hand man, local guy, and I got to know and talk to them a lot. And Ralph used to tell me stories about taking the cars that they were putting together and running them up Tomoka Farms Road here in Ormond Beach at night. And Smokey would drive, and Ralph would be on the floorboard with the flow meter, not buckled in, not strapped in, maybe a little rope tied to the roll bar or something. Did you, I assume you might have done something similar to that?
Well, it wasn't over here. It was over on the beach.
Now, how did that work? Tell us about that craziness.
Well, I mean, Brother Glenn... he sat on pole, set the records 3 years in a row, 56 to 58. And so we had this 40 Ford with a Mercury overhead engine in it. And so I wanted to adjust the timing to make sure that, we was getting all the horsepower we could get out of it. So I was going to set the timing, and I crawled in the car. And, no seat belt or nothing. And I'm looking at the tack so I can tell if this gained any ounce of RPM. And so I'm looking out the windshield, and all of a sudden the tide starts rolling in.
Yeah.
Well, when the car hit that tide, the thing went crossways. Now I'm looking out the side glass, knowing we're going to crash. Me, no belt or nothing. And it went sideways the other way and back this way, and he hit the throttle and pulled it out straight as arrow. And I think, thanks the good Lord, he's going to be the driver, and I'll just stick to being the mechanic.
Unbelievable. So it wasn't just the drivers who were risking their skin back then. It was the fool who would climb.
Oh, he had a seatbelt and a helmet on.
Well, if you didn't have the technology, you just had to do it the hard way, right?
Is there any way you could, you know, you were here when this place opened or shortly thereafter. I think you were in the service for a while and you missed it.
Yeah, Brother Glenn was in the very first race here, set on pole in a convertible, and was going to win the thing and run out of gas on the last
lap. I think you were in the service at the
time? Yeah, 57 to 59.
Yeah, okay. But, all right, so go back to 60 when you first came here, and you look at the old pictures, and this was almost like the moonscape almost out here. You didn't have the buildings. You didn't have all the different stuff that you have today. Is there any way to explain to people, is there any way to fathom just the changes in this facility from the way it looked at the very beginning?
Well, a little story. Come down here in 60, we built another 58 Ford with a 352 engine in it. And I was so proud of the exhaust. I'd made 8 exhaust pipes that come out the side underneath and right in front of the driver. Well, I got here and the inspector said, those pipes got to go back. You got to have exhaust back past the driver. And, you know, ain't no way we can do that. Well, go down here and get some pipe, you know, to make some extension. So I'm out here in the middle of the field welding these pipes and set the grass on fire. And Wendell Scott pulled his coat off, beat the fire out. Otherwise, wouldn't be no Daytona Speedway.
I used to hear stories about how before Speed Weeks, and then maybe he got the idea from you, Big Bill would have his guys, they would come out here and set the grass on fire on purpose. So they'd get it all chewed down because they were going to be bringing all the cars and motorhomes in. This is out here in the parking area where they would go.
Yeah,
I think they wanted to burn it down in a controlled environment before it caught fire accidentally and burned a bunch of cars, and then you would have all hell breaking loose.
Well, we were certainly giving them a head start.
Yeah.
But they used to have 4 weeks, you know, of Speed Weeks.
Yeah.
Come down, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you'd have the testing and practice forever. I was listening to Dave Marcus talk the other day, and he talked about the old days at Talladega. You go to Talladega on Tuesday of race week, and then they just open the track up from 9 to 5 and say, practice all day, part of the day, as much as you want or little as you want.
Yeah, I enjoyed Speed Weeks. They had, motorcycle racing, sports car racing, and all that.
How's Portofino? Did you go?
Oh, yeah. Wonderful.
Now you go, y'all go there once during Speed Weeks or more than once?
Well, I just go once. I think my nephews go probably 2 or 3 times.
Pretty much on a first-name basis with everybody there. A lot of the waitresses, I think, have been there since the beginning of time, too. Yeah, Portofino's an Italian joint over there on A1A in Daytona Beach Shores, and it's a Wood Brothers must-do every year, and probably July, too, right?
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Well, God, we're still saying July. This year it's going to be August.
Well, Len and Eddie go every night, don't they? That's really? That's the way Len told me. They go like every night. It's like the only restaurant.
Yeah, great guy, the owner. Very nice.
How are you going to feel about when 4th of July weekend approaches and you're not coming down here this year?
Well, it just ain't going to be the same, that's for sure. Yeah.
They don't have a beach in Indianapolis.
Yeah, I always remember, David Pearson come down here and Cale Yarborough and start at 10 o'clock in the morning and be heading up a road or either over on the beach in the afternoon. And I always liked that, but whatever brings the fans in is what is ever best for NASCAR going up for.
Yeah, what's good for business is good for everybody.
Well, what's good for NASCAR is good for your way of life.
And you're too young to retire, right?
Yeah, you don't need to be throwing off on NASCAR. You're throwing off on what pays you, know?
Right. So. Yeah, that's never stopped some people, though.
I know. They just don't realize it. Yeah. Don't cut off a hand that's feeding you.
Not if you like to eat.
SpeedweekRadio.com. We are live from Radio Row at Daytona International Speedway. We are talking to NASCAR Hall of Famer Leonard Wood. And in case you hadn't noticed, Godwin Kelly of the Daytona Beach News Journal has now joined the party. Good afternoon, sir.
We got to reset his watch.
Hey, I have good news for NASCAR because there's a lot of traffic around the track.
Ah.
And so I always time it Like I give myself an hour from where I live. I live like 30 miles north of here, Atlanta. And so I figure, you know, some days it's 45 minutes, some days it's an hour. So I figured today was a 45-minute day. Turned out to be an hour and 15 days. So
well, that's
it didn't quite work out.
On the other side of that, it's a good day.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. That's great for NASCAR.
Yeah.
That, you know, I'm late.
Have you been keeping up with Haley Deegan's career so far? Have you been watching?
I just saw where she's performance looked really impressive.
Yeah, but she's going to be here tomorrow morning. I was just curious as to what, you know, when you look at a young driver, not female, male, whatever, but any driver, when you look at a young driver who's, say, at that level, and she's going from K&M Racing to ARCA Racing this year, what do you think somebody should look for in a young driver to see if they're worthy of taking that next step?
And
if
they just like I was watching Matt DiBenedetto.
Hey, you did good on that, by the way.
Better than me.
And I was watching very close on the screen all his movements. And I did not see him make one wrong move.
Yeah.
I was highly impressed with him. He got kind of crowded out at the end, which happens to anybody, you know, and almost run the four car and him off the track. But they recovered it nicely,
sure.
Held on to it, and still had a decent finish.
You expecting a win or two this year?
Well, I mean, that's what you go for every race. You know, going in, you may not win, and just take it and go on to the next one. But I'd say just looking at his performance in the 150, he's got a great car, and he's got extreme talent, and I'd say we got a great shot to win, but still you got to overcome a lot of obstacles before you get there.
No kidding.
Yeah. I know David Pearson told Trevor Bayne, says, if you're not there at the end, you're not going to win.
That's simple math, isn't it?
That's pretty simple, but I'd say we got a good shot, but also I know it's a long ways to get there.
Yeah. Leonard, how aggravating is that aspect of this race? It's the biggest race of the year, but you know there's going to be crashes. I mean, it's just built into the system.
Well, that's why you really need to look ahead and look who's running, who's driving over the head or whatever, and watch out for it and just try to be ready for it. So definitely you got to look ahead.
Yeah.
What, going back to the heyday, to the greatest years of the Wood brothers, and you know, everybody would assume that was the Pearson years. And when you guys were running half the races, maybe a little bit more than half the races, but everywhere y'all went, you were one of two cars that everybody had to beat, you and the 43. Then you went everywhere you went, you knew you had a chance to win. Now, as time goes on and you get to the point where y'all aren't winning like that anymore, mentally, how does that? Do you approach that? Is it still just a job? As a job, when you know you're going there and you're not the team to beat anymore.
Well, like I said, you go to win. You still go to win, and you got so many more teams that's capable of winning than it used to be. I guess anybody could always win at a certain time, you know, but it's still harder to win because so many competitors that's got basically the same stuff.
Yeah.
You know, if you got the money, you can just buy the same stuff and man's winning the race, you know. And
yeah.
Used to, you made your own competition, your own own component parts.
Sure.
Competitive yourself, and you didn't sell it.
Yeah.
And now, though, if you got the money, you can buy the best it is.
Yeah.
Used to, you couldn't buy them good secrets. You'd let a guy know a little bit about what you're doing, but what really made it run, you didn't ever tell him. And it's same with him.
After Junior Johnson died recently, I was reading some stuff on him, and one of the stories, I know I've probably read it before, but forgotten it. They said that at his shop at home, back in the heyday of his, when he owned the team, not as a driver but as an owner, after the crew, after the mechanics and crew chief and all of them had already knocked off for the day and gone home, at night he would go out there and do what he knew, but he didn't want to tell other people. So he said, because he knew that that guy who's, he tells this, next year he might be working for somebody else. So he would go out there at night and do his little magic.
Yeah, well, I guess he had his own secrets that everybody did. But this Dale Inman, who's just down there, I saw him, I was interviewing him a minute ago. But a great competitor, and us and Pearson and Pettis was great competitors, very strong against each other in the competition. But he'd come up and ask me, what gear are you running? And then finally I'd tell him, and then I'd turn around and ask him what gear he's running, he's gone. Thank the world of Richard and Dale and Maurice and all of them. How competitive we were, and now we're best of friends.
Great.
But, and of course, I tell everybody all the time that these guys that's fighting against each other right now, battling and banging, they're the best of friends. They just don't know it yet.
NASCAR Hall of Famer Leonard Wood, on behalf of all the fans here today, thank you for not burning this place down in 1960.
Yeah,
it's much appreciated, and we thank you so much for spending time with us, sir.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.